Welcome to Popcorn Psychology, the podcast where we watch blockbuster movies and psychoanalyze them. My name is Brittany Brownfield, and I am a child therapist, and I'm joined by...
Ben Stover, individual therapist.
Hannah Espinoza-Rimas, marriage and family therapist.
We are all licensed clinical professional counselors, also known as therapists, who practice out of the Arden Counseling Center in Chicago. Even though we are licensed mental health professionals, this podcast is purely for entertainment purposes and to fulfill our love of dissecting pop culture in all forms.
So this week's episode, we chose Shutter Island. This was a request episode. It was actually my wife who requested this one, so wanted to make sure that she got her opportunity to get her request in. So we did this movie. This is an interesting psych movie. It covers the journey of a U.S. Marshal who goes to a prison slash mental health hospital.
Asylum for the criminally insane.
Right. on an island in Boston Harbor, but things aren't as they seem. Mm-hmm. As we journey through this movie, we realize that we're actually in the midst of a experimental treatment episode for a patient that is in the midst of a dissociative state.
Yeah. So basically what we're going to touch upon today is, I mean, kind of what we think is the actual diagnosis of the patient in question, which is Leonardo DiCaprio's character. I'm probably just going to call him Leo, to be honest, for this whole episode, because he goes by two different names throughout the movie. Yeah. And so basically what is his deal? Then we're going to kind of explore like the ethics of the quote unquote treatment that they give him in this movie. And then we're going to, you know, do our own treatment. How would we actually work with someone who had the symptoms that Leo is presenting in this movie?
Absolutely. So we're going to start off with, What is Leo's deal here? What is the symptom? So we've been having kind of a debate about this because in the film, and if you read up on the film, they never really disclose what diagnosis he has.
Which is probably on purpose, I would imagine.
Absolutely. It lends to some intrigue. It helps prevent stigma. But when we see Leonardo DiCaprio's character in this movie, he starts exhibiting... some symptoms of...
Well, I guess on paper, because like you said, Ben, we're to believe for the most of the movie that he is in reality, that he is a U.S. Marshal investigating a case in an institution on this island.
Correct.
Like that he is like a professional person.
Right.
And not like this is... We're led to believe that that's all reality. And so on the face of it, if you're just going to look at it like that, he's presenting a lot of symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Absolutely.
Which seems to be linked to, because it's set in the 50s, the movie, and so he was in World War II, and so a lot of it is linked to his experience in the war.
A lot of it, absolutely. They show several flashback scenes to him liberating a concentration camp.
Yeah, and then also watching a German soldier die and, like, kicking away the gun. Like, there's a big flashback scene where he's watching the German soldier bleed out really slowly.
Right, who botched to suicide.
Which was odd. And then he's really irritable. Like, he gets really, when they meet, he meets a psychiatrist that is trying to, if I'm remembering correctly, trying to disguise a German accent, probably because he was probably, like, a Nazi. And he picks up on it right away, is super irritable, and, like, starts a fight with him almost immediately. Which you could argue is like hypervigilance, like being really like keyed up about things that trigger your trauma. Mm-hmm.
Just and then being triggered by even just talking to somebody who has a German accent and putting him back in that place.
Mm-hmm. And then being really accusatory, feeling very threatened by that person, calling them out, starting a fight.
Yeah.
For sure. I feel like he drinks a lot in the movie too. Or no, they talk about how he used to be a drinker, because he doesn't drink in the movie. He drinks soda, and they question him on that. And it seemed like he used to drink too much, because that's part of the psychiatrist, the German one, is like calling him out. He's like, well, he used to drink. And like, and he like reads some, like a book. He brings, because I wrote down drinking on my notes, so I assume somewhere somebody said he had a drinking problem.
I think that's why he
wasn't drinking.
Andrew had a drinking problem. Teddy did not.
Well, let's not get, okay. Well, I guess we should clarify this. I'm assuming everyone's seen the movie, but in case you haven't.
Spoiler alert.
What we kind of discover at the end of the movie is that the whole movie, Leo is calling himself Teddy. And what you really realize is his name is Andrew. and that he's a patient at the asylum, and he's created this delusion that he's still a U.S. Marshal named Teddy.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that he's come to investigate the case of this missing patient, and he's talking down to the doctors and the staff about their ineptitude and their incompetence and their, how could you let a patient get out? Somebody must have seen something. He's definitely demonstrating some serious suspicion and paranoia at their competence at keeping a patient secure.
Mm-hmm.
And talks down to them often.
Mm-hmm. And then, so, the other symptoms that get unraveled as the movie, as the delusion gets unraveled, Will is one delusion. He's clearly in a state where he thinks he's a whole different person.
Mm-hmm.
He's having, so that's also, we consider a hallucination. I know, would you consider it a hallucination or just a delusion?
I do not think he showed any hallucinations in this movie. Except when he saw his wife.
Oh, he was seeing his wife talking to him.
Because she would appear...
Mm-hmm.
I think she appeared to him twice. Like, she happened in dreams, and then twice as he got less medicated.
Mm-hmm.
She showed up.
Up at least twice, because she showed up at the end, and she showed up in the dining room
in different states of like what she looked like. Right, like sometimes she was.
Sometimes she had blood different. On her.
Sometimes she had blood. Her hair was wet. The one time,
yeah.
And there's another time where she looks
burned.
Burned, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of, yeah.
Well, in the dream, she gets burnt up.
Right, she starts out normal, and then there's, like, the ashes in the air, and then her hair is wet, but then she's smoldering on her back, and then there's blood. Yeah, there's a lot of imagery there that's disturbing.
He also is showing, well, in my opinion, showing a lot of signs of paranoia, like, the case... Like, kind of where, for me at least, the first signs that maybe something was going on in this movie was... His feelings of, like, everyone was out to get him as he was investigating this case were starting to get way blown out of proportion and, like, I mean, nonsensical. Like, thinking that all the government agencies were, like, working against him and working together just to even get him on this island. Did they, like, intentionally kidnap this patient so he would get there? Because it also is the place where this guy lives who killed his wife and his fantasy. And, like, so it was very, like, convoluted in a way that does not exist in real life.
Right.
Unless you're a conspiracy theorist by trade.
Maybe.
So, I mean, where we kind of were struggling, and I guess this is a clear example, kind of like we talked about with Anchorman, where because it's a movie, not real life, it's kind of maybe like takes from different mental health diagnoses and kind of makes like a smorgasbord or like a miasma of them, like just kind of a cluttering up together to make the story work,
right?
Because where we were kind of struggling
Make his character be the character that they wanted him to be and the character they wanted him to play, and not necessarily trying to meet criteria for diagnosis, just kind of melding it all together in this kind of mishmash, which might also be why they didn't diagnose him.
Because I think there is a in my opinion. It seems to me like there is a movie version of psychosis, which is just people are psychotic and this character is psychotic. And it's like, that's their diagnosis. And that's how you know someone's psychotic is that they have fragmented thinking and they talk like gibberish and they like see things that aren't there. And it's this almost like this mishmash of just looking crazy and thinking crazy and acting crazy, you know, quote unquote. But psychosis in that very general state isn't really a thing, or being psychotic in that very generalized way that movies like to qualify people isn't a real thing. And I think that's why we were struggling before microphone to try to figure out what we thought his deal was.
Right. It's left ambiguous, but I mean, they give us some pretty solid clues to where you can make some arguments. And we had some disagreements on this, on, you know, like what diagnosis we felt were appropriate. Like, they give you clear symptoms. So he's got clear, defined symptoms of PTSD.
That's true. That's the truest thing.
That's the one that we all kind of agree with. Like, he definitely has PTSD. Like, it doesn't feel like that's wrong or, like, that's not being portrayed clearly.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, he's showing irritable behavior, avoidance. He's having flashbacks. He's having disturbed sleep.
He's hypervigilant, which means he's keyed up, like,
yeah,
like almost paranoid, but not quite. is what hypervigilance is, where you're looking at everything as a threat or not.
Mm-hmm. Right. So he's showing clear symptoms of trauma. He's got a defined trauma. Like, there's multiple traumas that we're exposed to that we know. They start showing us early in the movie mm-hmm. that he's still reacting to. Is we find out that he was a soldier.
Yeah,
in the European theater in World War II.
Ooh, fancy words.
Fancy words. and we know that he liberated a concentration camp.
Yeah.
Dachau.
Oh, yeah, Dachau. He does bring that up a few times.
So he saw absolute horrible, awful things. Some of the most awful things that have ever, ever mm-hmm. been done, ever.
Yes.
And then he witnessed another man who had shot himself dying in front of him,
mm-hmm.
which... that didn't seem to perturb him too much in the moment.
But he definitely based on their fiction, seemed like
keeps reliving it.
He keeps reliving it, and also his presentation, like how he looked in the flashback
mm-hmm.
as he was observing this man, was very like a very odd, like
it seemed like
detached,
was...
but almost like it's like he wasn't there when he was yeah. watching this guy in this a way that is a trauma reaction, which is, you know, taking yourself out of it a little right. bit, like spacing out during a
freezing.
During like a traumatic situation,
dissociating.
Mm-hmm. Which brings us to the next thing we were discussing, which is what is this state? This because the whole movie is basically in his head to a certain extent. Like his whole his identity, who he is, the case, all of it is a delusion. And when we say delusion, we mean like fantasy, like an idea that he created about the whole situation, and that.
That he yeah. believes 100%.
And to the point that he created a new name for himself, a new, like, situation about how his wife died, you know.
Characters.
Yeah, like, made a new name for her. Like, he created almost, like, a separate personality.
Yes.
Right. And it's like an idealized version of himself, which is where the diagnosis gets tricky. Like, for me... I think that he absolutely meets criteria for dissociative identity disorder.
Also known as?
Also known as, or formerly known as, mm-hmm. multiple personality disorder.
So I guess the debate is, which is what we're having off mic, is can you have dissociative identity disorder? We're going to say DID because that's a mouthful. Can you have DID if you only have one other personality besides yourself? And if that personality is so closely resembling your root personality.
Right. Where the debate comes in with this character is we don't know enough about who Andrew is or was. We yeah. know that Teddy is an idealized version of mm-hmm. Andrew. Mm-hmm. We know that because Andrew, we learn, that thinks of himself as a monster. In his last statement, mm-hmm. we learn, yes. So is it better to live as a monster or die as a good man?
Mm-hmm.
That's the last line in the film.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that Teddy is clearly an idealized version of Andrew.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what makes you think that?
What makes me think that Teddy?
Because he's not Andrew.
He's not ill. He's not sick.
That's true.
He didn't kill his wife.
Yeah, somebody else killed his wife. And it's interesting that he still keeps his true name, Andrew, as the name of the killer of his wife.
Exactly.
In his delusion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he's a good guy. I mean, he's a good guy. He's a U.S. Marshal.
Yeah.
Andrew is a prisoner.
True.
Because he's a murderer. Because mm-hmm. he's a monster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, because what we were kind of arguing was, is it more that he had, like, to have a delusion that full-blown, that's so closely still tied to your true identity. Like, I don't know. We were arguing if that was, like, more like a psychotic break, or was that, like... having psychosis
PTSD? That,
yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But I mean, I get where you're coming from, Ben. I can get on the train of it being DID. But it's like you said, like, we don't know enough about... Because in the movie, they talk about how violent he is. Like, Andrew, the patient, like, how violent right. he is. And that's part of why he's such a problem.
Right.
And we don't know if that is something... a different presentation of who he was before he was hospitalized. Like, was he a calm person before that? You know? And so the way he's presenting in the institution is, like, way different. And that could be another version of a personality state, you know?
Right. It could be. And that's what makes it ambiguous in this, and what makes it a story. I mean, remember when this came out, people used to debate it. Like, so people debated the ending on this. I mean, my wife got into a big discussion about the end of it. Like, did he recover or did he deliberately choose to get lobotomized, which we'll talk about later. But for sure, like, he is showing distinctly different personalities. So we learn at least a little bit that Andrew was away from home a lot, that he was drinking a lot, that he was detached from listening to the advice of other people, and he was kind of in this codependent marriage where he was not listening to the advice of doctors, friends, or family. Mm-hmm. Everyone told him not to move to this lake house. Mm. So remember, when he's having that conversation, I can't remember whether it was Mark Ruffalo or Ben Kingsley who was telling him, you know, that, you know, everyone told you not to do this. I can't remember.
Well, I think, doesn't he say something like...
But they go through that speech.
She... Not warned him, but there was obvious signs that she needed help, his wife, before the big incident. Because what I guess we could say is why he gets institutionalized is because his wife drowns their three children while he's gone.
Right.
And when he discovers it, he tries to save them. They're already deceased. And he shoots her in a state of trauma and kills her. And it's, I feel like there was a moment in the movie where he kind of says, you know, like, I knew, like, I was told, or she was telling me, or something like that, that she needed help, and I kept not listening.
Right.
Which is not an uncommon thing, especially back in the 50s and earlier.
Correct.
Which is kind of wishing mental health away.
But also, if he was struggling with something on his own and self-medicating with alcohol from having PTSD from the war, there's also a chance that he didn't have the capacity to get her help as a partner anyway.
But I guess, like, we bring up another question. So it's almost as if, so this trauma happens with killing his wife and probably a lot of guilt for not being around and saving the kids. Like, if he'd been home and maybe sober, like, they'd still be alive in his mind. And so then the debate would be that when that happened, he snapped and formed a second personality.
Which is something that does happen with trauma. Yeah. People can form a... They can split off from their main personality and form a second one to help protect themselves. Yeah. And they end up in what's called a fugue state, which is what my argument would be is what he is in until he gets into that lighthouse and gets confronted, is that he is in a dissociative fugue until he gets shocked out of it and confronted out of it with hard, harsh reality testing.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I don't know if... So I was thinking about what would be... One of the things that would be helpful to know is what the trial looked like and what he looked like at the trial. Like, if he was acting irrational. Well, if he was violent. Yeah. Like, if all of those things happened. Like, did he go from the trial right into this facility and then he was immediately violent? Like, was he violent with... Do you know what I'm saying? Like, was that a presentation the whole time? Or as he, once it ended, and then he ended up getting placed there, then all of these things started to happen.
Well, I mean, there was a reason why he was put into an asylum and not a prison.
Right.
And so I wonder, so that would assume that he was acting erratic or of not sound mind during the trial, I would assume. But also I feel like...
Who knows?
Because here's something we should also say. This time period, well, I guess any time period before, like, I don't know, the 90s, should we go that late, be that unfair, was kind of like the Wild West in psychiatry and mental health in general. Like, why people were doing what they were doing treatment-wise, why people were being classified as mentally ill. Like, I can't even, like, hazard a guess about what they would have considered insane, and so you'd go into an institution instead of go to prison.
Well, the other thing we have to think about with him is that he was probably shown leniency.
Because he was a U.S. Marshal? And also because he killed his kids?
For multiple reasons. I mean,
he was a soldier.
He was a soldier, so he would have been viewed as a hero.
True.
Because he...
A hero, and then he was a U.S. Marshal after that, I mean...
And then I'm sure there were a bunch of bros, like, well, if my wife killed my three kids, I'd shoot her too. You know what I mean? There's probably a lot of, like... that being thrown around.
But also, if it happened in the setting where the way that it seems like it happened, which is he comes home, he finds that the kids are dead. He's trying to, his brain is trying to calculate that. And then his wife is like, no, we'll just do this. It'll be fine.
They'll be
and
our
then,
living dolls.
And then she kill, and then he kills her immediately. I mean, that seems like that's just all trauma reaction.
Which, I mean, well, they could also have argued that he killed her in a state of extreme distress when he wasn't, when he was in like in a moment of insanity, I guess.
Right.
Is how they would clarify
that trauma of seeing that and knowing that your partner did that. And I just don't.
Because I think it'd be a lot of things that back in the day people would have been like, oh, I understand. Like, there would have been a lot of, like, old school thinking about that.
Right. I don't know when NGRI became a thing, which is not guilty by reason of insanity, but...
Neither do I.
I feel like he would have been a good candidate for the people we see who are...
Oh, yeah.
Given that, like, a jury... I could see a jury showing this man some degree of...
Yeah.
Like, understanding and compassion. Like, recognize, no, you're still... You're ill, and you need help, but I don't view you as... inherently violent individual who deserves to go to prison. This is a hero we're talking about. Is likely the way it would have been
so
interpreted.
So then it's interesting how violent he is and how violent they say that he is once he gets there.
Well, do you think the violence is he's
part
violent because he's being constantly challenged with the truth and he's like in a fugue state and then he gets like confronted with reality and then he becomes violent?
Well, they flat tell us that when he, remember the whole interaction with Jackie Earle Haley's character. Like, the whole point is...
That's the guy that was locked in that he was calling Andrew Latus, that he...
Oh, okay.
That he battered.
Okay,
well, Andrew Latus was the guy lighting the matches.
Oh, God, this movie.
Character so much, names.
Was so much, the guy with the scar, but this was another...
The little bald guy that was in the jail cell that got the shit kicked out of him. He got the shit kicked out of him by Leo.
Right. Who had done that because... The doctor tells you he did that because that character called him Andrew.
So is the assumption...
So you are the one that hurt him.
So is the assumption that he's just been walking around this asylum as Teddy?
Is that what we're assuming? I think that's the assumption.
And that they turn it into he assumes what he's delusional about for 2 days to try and snap him out of it.
Right. So, I think they because they give him
because
that story of that woman.
He's so violent because every time somebody presents him with his name or like
the truth.
What you said, with the truth, with reality testing, he can't manage it, which totally makes sense if we think about somebody who is in this state, this, you know, a fugue state where he clearly can't manage it because he's made up this whole other person so that he can deal with it.
It does make sense. I mean, so it makes the DID argument...
Yeah,
makes more sense.
It does.
Because he is... But fine. I guess it's interesting that it's like a continuation. I guess because... Well, I think one thing we should also say is none of us have worked with DID. Everything we know about DID is like we learned out of textbooks and or from movies.
Yeah. Correct.
And so we don't really know what it would look like if it was in front of us, like what looks real and what looks like bullshit or like cinematic.
Correct.
And so I don't know if like someone with DID would be... constantly in a state of the other personality, because my understanding of it, which could be totally wrong, is that they're shifting between personalities a lot. But I also don't know if you're in a constant state of trauma if you would stay stuck in one personality or one alter for the entirety of, you know what I mean, like if you'd become the one of your personalities.
Right. And what we've kind of discussed as we researched this a little bit is that with this particular movie, it's not necessarily represented as accurately, like you're saying, but what we do see with him is that it's not the type. There's two different types of it. There's one that is more of like a forced like possession by another being. Like some people interpret this as like demonic possession or like the ghost of another person has invaded you or there's some other spirit or something, whereas other ones kind of involve... internally, and there's a word for that that I will find in a minute. But I think that with this character, we see a pretty clear split, but what we don't know is how often, if ever, he is Andrew.
Yeah, if he ever goes back or if he's always in.
Well, he had that one, they said he kind of had like a...
9 months ago.
Yeah, he had like a sense of reality and could recognize who he was, but then he shifted back into Teddy.
And he shifted back into Teddy hard, they
but
said.
It was
like he snapped all the way back and almost went, regressed even farther back into the character of Teddy.
I mean, I guess But I think this is kind of like what I was saying, like the cinematic version of psychosis, which is that when you're psychotic, you just don't have a good sense of reality and you have breaks from reality. And this is how what it looks like if you're psychotic, then this is what it could look like when that's not really how it presents realistically.
Right.
Because I bet they never thought DID when they were writing this movie. They were probably just thinking someone who's having a break from reality.
Yeah. I can
and they probably weren't thinking he has a whole other personality he's created. In the sense of DID.
Yeah.
So sustained periods of identity disruption may occur when psychological pressures are severe or prolonged.
Oh, so being chronically in a institution that's challenging you.
And
I mean, the fact that he's there in and of itself challenges the reality of who he is.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And that it was brought on by the fact that his wife murdered their children.
And because he's being reminded that he's lost his whole family.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's one of the biggest life changes you can have.
Correct. So, and the other thing, the word I was thinking of, is a possession form. Oh. Is the other type. So the
snap.
And also how his identity would be completely shifted. When you lose your entire family, who does that make you? And how it makes it unstable to begin with.
Well, I mean, if we're going to get real into it, post-war, I'm sure there's a lot of guys who are like trying to deal with their shell shock or soldier's heart or whatever they were calling it then.
Yeah.
By like doing the American dream and like kind of hiding within the American dream, like having a family, making babies, having a good job, rolling out of life. And so to lose that when he's probably already like barely hanging in there.
Yeah.
Well, like, based on the fact full blown snap.
Yeah. Well, based on the fact that he's self-medicating as well with drinking, which is what they... That's what happened.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, and then they told us he was doing that. He was drinking. He was burying himself in work. He had this beautiful wife and three children, but his wife was
mentally ill.
And according to the movie, manic depressive, and had burned down their apartment.
Yeah, the fact that she burned down his apartment and then he's like, I'm going to let you like kick it with our kids, old school, like next to a lake. Like, that's cool, beans.
In Maine, like just hang like, away from everybody, away from the city.
And also just like the stress of being a single parent, like regardless.
Absolutely.
Of these three kids on her own and then being mentally ill, like... I mean, we're not going to...
And also removing her from what she knows... And from the places that they've lived before. And so we're moving somebody who has a mental illness and taking them away from all of their natural supports.
Mm-hmm.
Right. To a lake
that's town. There's a chance of, you know, your symptoms getting increased just because of that alone.
Well, the isolation, too.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The isolation and not having the people that you normally talk to or not having a place that you can go where you feel calm and not knowing. I mean, like, there's so many ways. There are so many chances that her symptoms were going to get worse based on the idea that they would move.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Mm-hmm. This is laden with opportunity for mental illness to fester.
Yeah.
And I guess also what we should say it is manic depressive is the old school term for bipolar.
Correct.
And I'm sure she had bipolar with psychotic features, which is what led her to drowning her children, because she probably had her own delusion. Because if you just have like standard bipolar, you're not typically violent like that or, you know, murderous like that.
No, and something that, you know, we see in movies all the time that is patently false, and we see it even in the media with, you know, talking about people with mental illness who have done mass shootings. Like, the only prior predictor of violence is past violence.
Mm-hmm. She burned down their apartment. Mm-hmm.
She showed signs of instability before. Yeah. She had self-injury attempts. Like, we've got lots of evidence with this woman that she's potentially dangerous, and evidence with him that he's got capacity for violence. But that in movies, we see this all the time, and that...
Where they just slap, like, any old mental illness on you and you might be a killer.
Precursor to all violence is mental illness.
Is that you have mental illness first, and it's not that, oh, you've been violent in the past, and that's what the issue is.
Right. Mm-hmm. Violence is typically socially generated, not generated just by mental illness. Right.
Generated.
I mean, it can be, but it's not it's not an A to B. It's not just a definitive. Mm-hmm. So that's a whole topic in itself, but we can address it at a different time. But if we talk about Leo, in this movie, I think that he is showing clear evidence of two diagnoses. These diagnoses in the new DSM can be combined, but I think he meets criteria for both. I do not think he meets the criteria, because you can see post-traumatic stress disorder.
Clearly.
All over the place.
All over the place. Mm-hmm. And you can diagnose that with a dissociative symptom specifier, but they'd have to show intense derealization or depersonalization.
And what do those words mean, Benjamin?
Derealization means feeling like you're detached from reality, where depersonalization feels like you're detached from yourself.
Okay.
And I don't feel like he necessarily meets criteria for either one of those categories of what this would look like if we were to use that specifier. I think he would meet criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder chronic, along with dissociative identity disorder.
And I think why we would give him both instead of one or the other combo is because it's two separate things created these diagnoses. So he already had the PTSD.
Yeah.
And then another trauma occurred, which started the DID.
Correct.
And so if those both those things had happened at the same time, like both symptoms, then it's more muddied and you would have to do more like thinking, like, is it more one or the other? Or should I give both? Right. But since it was like almost like two clear incidents that caused a clear diagnosis afterwards, it's more indicative of giving two.
Yeah. Right. So the next topic we thought was important to discuss when talking about this movie were the ethics of the treatment.
This shit is wild. Like, we haven't even talked about Ben Kingsley, who is the psychiatrist, and just...
And Gandhi, just so you know.
Yeah. And it's just... Well, because here's the treatment. Treatment is basically... He is trying, I guess, what he would call experimental treatment. Which is, he's like, what would happen if we just let Andrew just go full-blown with this Teddy scenario and give him free run of the institution and the staff to a certain extent and the other patients to a certain extent and the grounds and just see if he played this whole scenario out of, like, being Teddy and trying to solve this case, would he come out the other side? And that shit is bonkers. Discuss.
The idea... agreed, Brittany, I agree. I think that I can't imagine feeding the stuff that they feed him about the woman being missing and him having a partner. I don't know how you could live with yourself to set somebody up in that scenario. I know that, you know, I haven't worked with anybody. Like we all said, none of us have worked with anyone who has DID, but... I've worked with people who struggle with having delusions, and even any small reality check makes it so hard for them to manage because it puts them into a state of
irritation
and irritability and being confused and not understanding. And so to purposefully...
Well, I mean, I guess just, the argument is that they're not reality checking him. They're letting him slowly...
But then they do.
At the very end.
And they also set him up to believe... They, like, give him more ammo to believe the delusion he's already in.
Yeah.
Right? Because they set him up with
the
story.
Well, they give him the partner that's his psychologist. His psychologist, Mark Ruffalo, like, is pumping up the paranoid parts of it with, like, the conspiracies of government agencies working against him to get him on this island and during a storm. Like, and so, I guess just, well, I guess the first thing would be they're... Not only are they choosing to kind of just play out this scenario with him, let him do what he likes, they also took him off of his medicine at the same time. So that's two variables that you're changing simultaneously, which is like bad business 101 in terms of therapy. Like taking someone off their medication and also dramatically changing up an environmental factor. Doing those two things simultaneously. Because then if he got better or got worse, you wouldn't be able to pinpoint what was the thing that helped.
Right.
Right.
And, or hindered.
And there's a chance that he would get so, in my mind, I think about, there's a chance that he gets so stuck that I don't know how you would be able to help him.
No, right. Because one of the things that we see when you deal with people that are in some sort of delusional state is that they cling to the evidence that they are shown that any bit of it is true.
So this
any
would be
shred
like
shred of evidence.
He would eat out on this scenario for the next like 10 years. Like this would give him like this. Yeah. Like he would just this.
Remember
was just
that
like a
time
of,
when Chuck came
and
we
and the storm happened and that girl was missing. Like he would eat. He would like eat out on that scenario forever
because that's how they stay feeling safe, right? Mm-hmm. Because then they're created a delusion in which they feel safe playing the character that they play.
Mm-hmm.
And so having, I just, and besides the fact that they're messing with him, and then they're also, what about the other people who are there?
Well, I mean, that's also, that's
like, how do you put other people's lives in danger?
Practically and ethically.
Yeah.
You are endangering your staff. You're endangering the fellow patients. You're endangering the whole structure of the place. What are the rules? Are there any protocol for if he gets too wild? Are you supposed to, like, trank him in the neck? Like, just, but I guess what we also don't know, which is we kind of, I kind of said in the earlier, is I have no idea what shit like this looked like in the 50s. It could have been like a free-for-all for whoever was the medical director or psych director on staff.
Yeah,
like it could have been like, we're gonna
try this and see what happens,
right? Or if he had set it up as a research study, because they did mention we'll be discredited, or he didn't mention that. What's his,
I wrote that down,
what's his, Max von Sydow, the German one, yeah, mentioned
they'll
that
be, yeah, there's have a special grant conducting experiments on the brain. That's what I wrote down. I don't know if that has anything
and he
to
said
do
we
this.
Will be discredited if you don't recover from this. Or maybe Ben Kingsley said, I can't remember, one of the two of them said it. One,
yeah.
But when, like, the things that we run into is like, is this ethical? Like, it becomes an interesting question of like, how do you innovate treatment and try new things? Because some of the things that we've seen tried that work, like some of the things that you have to do for OCD can be pretty harsh, where you confront people with exposure therapy to the things that they are the most afraid of, to show them that they can deal. It's not that bad. Mm-hmm. The things that you are afraid of happening are not going to happen, and even if they do, you can handle it. But sometimes the only way to see that, you saw something like this on the show The OCD Project. I don't know if you guys saw that at all. It was an MTV show where one of the guys that's on Hoarders, one of the psychiatrists from that, or psychologists from that, was on that, and he confronted people hardcore with their OCD fears. Like, made, like, this woman who was afraid her son was going to die, like, created a mock funeral for her to go to.
But I guess here's the argument. OCD is different from psychosis.
Correct.
In that, literally, well, the actual term of psychosis or like schizophrenia is like broken mind. Like, you aren't, your brain is not working correctly.
Split mind.
You split mind. And so the philosophy of the Ben Kingsley character, the psychiatrist, is that he thinks that everyone's brains can like naturally heal themselves. Like, he's kind of anti-medication, and he kind of presents this idea that like, if you just process and talk through something, your brain can like heal you or heal itself.
Right.
And so I get philosophically why he thought this would work. You know what I mean? But the fact that he was putting everybody there at risk, especially with a client who is known to be violent, who has committed a violent crime. Like, it'd be different if maybe you had like a meek, mousy, like, you know what I mean, like calm patient who was just like not there, and you were like, "Well, let's just let her kind of play this thing out."
Right,
and we'll have people around her, and we'll kind of be like on top of her a little bit, but we'll kind of let her do her thing for maybe like a day or two, and then see if something comes out of it. But the fact that they choose who they identify as the wildest patient,
the
most violent,
dangerous client
they've ever had
to do this. I mean, I'm sure the staff, who were all African American, all the orderlies, were at a disadvantage where they probably felt like they couldn't walk away from this job, but like, I feel like if you did this now, they'd be like, fuck you, we're going to call CNN. This place is going to be shut down in, like, 24 hours.
Right. Right. I mean, it's an interesting thing, like, we run into with this doctor, because in many ways, they show him as definitely different from the mindset you see in common movies from this period of mental health. With, like, let's drug him up, let's put him in a corner, which he talks about, like, he talks about a lot of the things that make a good therapist, which is resetting the language that he allows people to even use on his patients.
That's true.
Because everyone's calling them prisoners.
And he says they're patients.
And he calls them patients. Mm-hmm. And he resets talking about treatment without judgment. Like, if you just listen and try to understand the people. Like, he shows a lot of signs of an enlightened human being.
True.
That a lot of people, when they're dealing with people with mental illness, miss. That, what you miss is that this is just as real for this person, this reality that they're living, even though it's not real, is just as real for them as your life is for you. And the things that are terrifying them are just as terrifying
for you. Like, all the threats for them are real.
They're real. Yep, there's no question that it's real. So, like, where this runs into, like, the ethical, description, and I give an opinion of this. I'm devil's advocating a little bit here.
Okay.
But the where they're showing something is that he's not getting better responding to conventional treatment at all. But mm-hmm. where so doing something innovative and brave like this, I think is interesting. It's an interesting debate. But where it becomes a problem is that he endangered his staff.
He needs to be in a controlled setting.
And it's as controlled as it can get. Like, they're on an island, but they're still... Yeah. They picked patients to play roles in this. That I have a problem
that's
with.
That's horrible.
But then again, we do that in groups. However, there's consent. The difference becomes it's informed consent, and that's
and
where the
safe,
ethical
but
debate
it's,
happens.
And it's a safe place, and you do an assessment on all the people who are in the group and make sure that they're right for the things that you're going to try and do. And I feel like, yeah, I get the idea that when nothing else works and you feel like you could really help someone
right.
if I do something a little bit different, and maybe, and that's how new, right? That's how new therapies and new things get started, is that somebody's like, this isn't working with this client. I want to try something different. But it just, the way that it's, so many things are disregarded in this. There's no way that this would, even if this had worked and he goes to a research hospital and is like, hey, they're like, no, you dude, you can't, A, you can't even tell me that that's what actually helped. You also took him off his meds.
Right.
There's no control. There's no way, like what Brittany was saying, there's no way to know what actually helped. So this, you can't tell me this is effective. And also, how many people got hurt during this?
Well, we got one patient hurt and one, at least one staff.
Yeah. It's
the guard with the rifle by the lighthouse, he got hit. He got hit with a rifle butt stock. Like, that can kill you.
Yeah.
Movies don't show the amount of damage that is capable of that accurately at all, but they also think you know, let you think that you can dodge a hand grenade by jumping behind a wall, which is also horseshit.
Well, I guess here's the thing: the benefit of the doubt we can give him, the psychiatrist, is that kind of like I was saying, like it was sort of the Wild West too, in terms of not because they were just doing whatever the fuck they wanted and they were like all like masochists
or
sadists. It was because there was a lot that was still, there's a lot we still don't know about the brain. And so back then, you know, a lot of it was trial and error because you're trying to figure out what's most helpful. And he didn't know what he didn't know. I mean, he probably would have been thinking the same thing when you'd read back in the day and they'd be like, that person was possessed or that person was a witch. Like, and how those people were stupid and the way that we're being judging him. You know what I mean? It's just he didn't know. And I do think you're right. Like, him not leaning so much on medicine for that time period was very enlightened and very kind and non-judgmental in a way that is very good. But and part of it is because he probably did not understand or did not fully comprehend yet, because of research, there's a difference between people who are psychotic and people who are not, in terms of their thinking and their ability to grasp reality.
Right. And you have to remember, like, also at this point, psychiatry is 20, 30 years old.
Yeah.
Like, really, it's not a very old profession at this point. But we also, like, I want to point out that in this scenario here, just to devil's advocate again, they did put as many safeguards in as possible. He did have the orderlies who were around him all the time. Like, even though the guards were playing roles in this, they were always around.
That's true.
And then there were, his doctor was with him undercover, but the doctor lying to him and assuming a role he didn't know about.
Well,
like,
him
there's lots
up
of
the
ethical
paranoia,
questions.
Him, that scene where they're in that room and he's like pumping up the paranoia about government agencies, conspiracies. Like, that's too leading, like leading the witness. Like, it's too, like, that's something you have to be very careful with as a mental health professional working with someone who does have delusions and psychosis, is that you're not feeding into it or leading them. Like, if they bring up their stuff, like the things that they feel like are real, you just kind of listen and let them kind of guide the scenario. You don't also give them more ideas.
Right.
Right.
About who could be hurting you, who could be after you, how they could be getting to you. Like,
right. You don't feed it. You don't encourage it. Yeah. And the other things that I did have legit problems with is that there were also plants in this story to make
like
him directly.
Cave? The cave situation where he goes to the cave and that woman's there. Who's the real Rachel?
I don't even know if that was real.
Oh.
I don't know if that was real. I don't think that was real at all. I think that one, I forgot about that one. I think that one was probably...
I guess that is true. Why would they assume he would wander to a cave? And he was also not guarded then.
Well,
that's
he,
when
went
he, kind
down,
of like
he went down to find the body of Chuck.
Who we thought got...
Who he thought...
Jumped off the cliff.
Jumped off the cliff for no apparent reason.
Right. So I think like at that point he was psychotic, but
that makes a lot more sense. And also that's probably the point when the medicine might have been the totally most out of worn his system. Off
right.
By but, that time.
But what I was upset by, although there are some treatments we do, like the one I do, EMDR, to like where we deliberately re-expose people to the things that they are traumatized by. However, we do it in a safe, controlled manner where the patient is informed of what's going to happen and know that they have the control to stop at any point in time. He did not have any of that.
And you assess people a bunch before you do that. To absolutely. Make sure they're of sound mind enough to do it.
But he triggered him. He had, this doctor that was German, maybe he was... Like, they used him deliberately and didn't introduce him till a certain point where the same music that I'm sure Leo's character had told the doctor was playing, that same exact record was playing when he confronted the German doctor, or was confronted by the German doctor in the asylum.
Well, yeah, I know what you mean.
Because they're playing the same song that was playing in the commandant's office. Which is
probably something he disclosed to Mark Ruffalo's character.
I'm certain of that. That was the same song. That wasn't an. So again, I don't think it was an accident.
But do you think that argument then on their part was that we have to make sure that, like, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it. And so we got to make sure he's like, no, he's like at the extent of like his break from reality.
I think
push
so.
Him. I mean, I think they clearly tried to push him as far as they thought that he could go.
And they also tried to plan it by giving him a case that was foreshadowing of his experience, exactly. Which is a woman who is still believes that she's in her house with her kids that she killed.
Right. And then he reacts every single time to any mention of drowning. Like, you see him, he gets sweatier. Mm-hmm. His face contorts. He does all sorts of things.
Yeah, I wrote down in the very beginning of the movie where he's on the water. He's by the water, and he just has a trauma reaction. And I couldn't figure out. I was like, oh, what is going on with this water thing? And then, clearly, his kids were drowned. And so that made a lot more sense to me. But, like, just putting him in all, like, I think they, didn't he go on the ferry, like, come on the ferry to the island with the partner?
With Chuck, yeah.
Yeah, so they put him in a situation where he had to be out in water.
Right.
And knew that they he started would have a him reaction.
Off the island. What if he just like ran off?
That's what I'm saying.
I guess maybe they assumed that they had like plants on the boat. Well, that I'm were sure just gonna, that like, they had. Him.
Well, I mean, and Mark Ruffalo, the doctor, was with him.
Right. Well, what I wonder is like, at what point did they trigger his delusion? So this all started. I mean, that's probably just a plot hole. I realize as we're talking about this, but like, hold on though. How far maybe did they take like, him out on this boat like, before they like started calling him Teddy?
Maybe they like tranked him. Dressed him in an outfit, like
yes,
and then woke him up on the ferry.
I mean,
like,
based
you
on
hear?
All the other bonkers things that they did, I mean, that doesn't. Seem
I mean,
far-fetched.
Also, we're also assuming this is the first time they've tried this.
It's
the first time they've tried this specific scenario. Like maybe they've done it a couple times and it didn't start right.
That's I mean, true. Maybe that's they true. Could have redone it because well, they said they've attempted different things like three mm-hmm. times and he gets mm-hmm. he retreats. So to go more extreme with it to the point where he has to confront everything at once, mm-hmm. like to. I guess their concept is that you shock him out of the delusion by confronting him with every bit
yeah, that
of falsehood.
Whole, okay, what is your opinion on how you think that would really shake out?
I think...
The scene at the end when they're like, nah, man, you are Andrew. Andrew is Teddy. Like, here is real life. And he like kind of like wigs out, but then he's like, okay.
I think that would end in violence.
Yeah, I agree. If he's already a violent person... Yeah.
I think it would end in violence, I think, or it would end in him, like, passing out or something. Like, I mean, I don't think that he would be able to manage it. I don't think that it would have ended up with a conversation.
No,
that's
I think...
That's for fucking sure.
No, the cognitive dissonance there would have been so strong...
That's ridiculous.
...that it, like, he would have been so distressed.
Yeah, he wouldn't be able to manage anything, I don't think. I think he would attack
like,
them.
It's like trying to wake up a sleepwalker. I think he'd just, like...
Yeah.
...snap. And it's because... And also, why wouldn't he just assume this is part of the conspiracy? You've got him so worked up and so in this space of feeling like everyone's out to get him.
Why
would he
believe
that this is the real truth?
Why would he ever, right. He would never have a reason to believe the psychiatrist.
No.
Yeah.
And what kills me about this movie is that the treatment worked. That's the part to like, is it worked.
Well, it's this whole idea, too, that, like, there's a threshold to how psychotic you can be. And then once you break through that threshold, then you're like... You're gonna chill
good?
Out, which is
then
not true.
Good? Yeah.
And then also that it's also this misconcept that like your brain, you just have, it's like it's like they're trying to lead him through a maze to like peace, like in his mind. And if we can just lead him through this scenario and just work it all the way through, he'll find the center of the maze, which is his actual sane mind, which is also not through, because he's not thinking what we call tangentially. Well, wait, hold up. I get that wrong. Tangential linearly. Thinking is disconnected.
Right.
So he's thinking tangentially, which is disconnected thought. He's not thinking linearly. So
no,
you're,
he's not.
You're expecting him to think linearly and think of this as a story that has an end, or that once he's challenged by things that don't make sense, he'll like be like, oh, you got me. You're right.
Oh, you guys are right.
Because we haven't worked with DID, but I've worked with patients, clients who are, you know, living in a state of like paranoid delusions, not like to this level. It's more just like hearing things, seeing, like thinking the person like at the corner store is the same person that was in your hallway, is the same person that's upstairs, and they're like plotting against you, but like not necessarily acting out on it, but just this constant like paranoid thinking.
Yeah.
And the more, in my experience, the more that would get challenged, the more they would stick their feet in the ground about it.
Yeah.
And yep. Then you just become part of that plot.
Yep. You're just somebody else who doesn't believe them.
And that's exactly what happened in my experience in working with clients like this, because I started my career working with people who were dealing with psychotic disorders, is when they're deep into it, you don't become another ally by confronting them. You become an adversary who's in on it.
Because yeah. I've tried the reality checking.
We did.
And it didn't go over well.
It just doesn't, because then they get into the state of having to defend themselves, and then they're, and then it's just, they're back in this routine of having to defend themselves, and it just doesn't. And
being reminded that you are quote unquote crazy does not make anyone get on your side.
And it's like, not going to make them trust you. Because
in my experience, what it usually looks like is, you don't believe me, you think I'm nuts, or you're out to get me too. And so it just, they just, like you said, they get defensive and they just get oppositional with you because they can't wrap their heads around the reality of the situation for whatever reason.
Right.
You know? And because in my experience, I think we've all worked with people who are, you know, with chronic mental illness, where they've had enough people in their life tell them that you're this crazy. Isn't, that you're crazy, this isn't true, you know, this isn't right. And so you're just another one of those people on a list. I mean, we're not, a lot of the times they've had more than enough people tell them that that's not real, and you're imagining that, and it's your mental illness. And it's clear that that's not, that it's not helpful. It doesn't help them heal. It doesn't help them trust mental health professionals, for sure.
No. And what I loved about Ben Kingsley's speech, like the beginning, where he's like, you know, you have to meet them where they're at.
Yeah.
You have to, like,
which we talk about all the time, about how important that is.
Right. And sit with them and listen to them and try to understand. And that's a key point of it. And having people start to confront realities is a part of what you want to do with clients that are psychotic. But you also want to be sure that you are doing it gently, in a controlled manner that inspires them to do it. You can't force it on them. They have to slowly challenge and accept their version of reality. And you can't just force it on, like they're doing with Leo, like where they're like they're trying to just destroy and break down his delusional world that he's created, and then with the hopes that he'll rebuild. And what happens is why ultimately I'd rule that this is not ethical, is that there wasn't space for him to then immediately start treatment or start working on coming back and coping with.
He was calm as hell after that situation. He was bummed out. But he was, like, calm.
He was like, oh, okay.
And it was literally like they snapped him out of it. And he was like, you're right. I'm not Teddy. And it's like, what? It's like they're treating it like psychosis is a switch in your mind that you can't, that you can think yourself out of.
And you can't.
And you can't.
You can't. You can't.
It's a imbalance. It's a, you know, it's a split brain. It's not something that you can just, oh, I can just talk to you long enough that you're going to figure it out. That's not how that works.
No, not at all. And it bothered me that he essentially chose, because he no longer had the option to self-medicate, he chose to get a lobotomy rather than continue to face.
Which we haven't even talked about.
We haven't.
Lobotomies. I wrote, ugh, lobotomies in my notes. When they first brought it up, I was like, oh, lobotomies.
Yeah, so speaking of lobotomies, I think we can move into the treatment phase of this, which, or we
give
can
them
discuss.
Give them a lobotomy, right?
I mean, give obviously, I want to give, particularly women who are hysterical, I think those are exactly who needs lobotomies all the time, right? That's what they're for? Don't stab me.
Oh, I'll lobotomize you. So I don't know if people know Just in case people don't know what lobotomies are, I think lobotomies is something people say a lot in movies, old-timey movies hear a lot, but I don't know if people really know what it is.
About movies about mental health, for right. sure.
So this, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Rough stuff. But lobotomies, basically, they take what looks like a gigantic ice pick, they put it kind of in your tear... I don't know why. I'm using visuals your right now on a podcast and pointing to my eye. But they use, like, kind of where your tear duct is in the corner of your eye. They tap it with a little hammer. Ugh. It, like, grosses me out to talk about. And they tap it in until they hit what they hope is your frontal lobe. And the idea is that once you kind of damage part of your brain, that it will change your behavior and will, I think, specifically decrease irritability and aggression. And it kind of goes off of, like, everybody who took Psych 101 learned about Phineas Gage, which is that dude who, like, got the train spike
right,
lodged
his
in his
head. Right.
And then his personality was totally different. And so that was kind of, like, the first beginnings of the idea of, like, maybe if we purposely do something like that.
Right, neuroplasticity.
Behaviors. And basically what you did is, well, one, I'm sure it was not... We didn't have cameras looking in your brain or, like, right. brain scans, so you were just tap, tap, tapping and hoping you hit the right area. So that's part of it. And two, hoping you got the right depth of it. And then also, because what usually happened, from what I understand, is a lot of people just became, like, comatose vegetables.
Yeah.
Just kind of like...
Well, it's like intentional...
What you call soft-headed.
Yeah, intentional brain damage. Like, they damaged your brain, and then you aren't able to have the
you're cognitively disabled.
So, yeah, like...
So, lobotomies were... I mean, they probably, quote-unquote, worked in the context of you calm someone down and you got rid of the problem, which is the problem of them being aggressive, and then you can just kind of, like, keep them in an institution like a plant. Like an actual plant, and you watered it, and you made sure it was sleeping, and they weren't people anymore, for the most part. I know there's people that have been, quote-unquote, lobotomized, like, that were okay after it, but then that begs the question of maybe when they were lobotomized, did it go deep enough? You know what I mean? Did they hit a different area or no area and assumed they lobotomized them?
I know that you looked up a little bit of information, but I was even wondering how many people died when they tried to do that.
Oh, I can't. I mean, I don't have that facts in front of me, but I can't imagine.
Right?
But also, like, the steps before you get to, we're going to go through the tear duct into the brain. Like,
right,
there was, like, different trials before they got to that exact equation. So God knows what and how they're, I mean, they used to do, like, trepanning, where they'd, like, drill a hole in your head to, like, ease the pressure off your brain, which I know they still do medically sometimes in extreme situations, but they used to also do that shit.
I think if your brain
for, like, psychosis, willful mental illness.
Swollen.
Right.
They were like, let's get some air in that brain, and then it can, like, heal up.
let the demons out. Like, drill a hole in your head to let the demons out.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
True.
With the lobotomy, they're just did some extra research on it. Like, they are separating your prefrontal cortex from the rest of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
They're damaging the connections so that you're losing your ability to function completely as a adult human being. It's terrifying and frightening. And I think one of the most famous cases of it was they did it to President Kennedy's sister, which was it, Rosemary?
And she was institutionalized for the rest of her life after it.
Right. She was never the same.
Yeah. It seems like when you see it, when it's talked about, like, in pop culture, it seems people just seem kind of, like, glazed over. Like, they're
zombified.
Just not quite there anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I don't think people do it anymore. It was banned. I think by the 70s, most places had banned it. I'm sure there are people who are still doing it, because there's still people doing everything. But, so basically we're saying no to lobotomies if you were contemplating it for your own mental health.
Go ahead and rule that out.
And in terms of treatment, I guess we can kind of touch upon what, I mean, one of the things they did do accurately in the movie is they named two antipsychotics medicines. They named two medications, Thorazine, which is also called chlorpromazine. Nailed it. And that is an antipsychotic that's still being used.
Yep.
Generally, only in its cases of extreme psychotic disorder, because it has strong side effects.
medical side effects.
Strong medical side effects. What can make you tired? Mm-hmm. It can make you have tremors.
Mm-hmm.
It can create like tongue lashing. It can create a lot of pretty intense weight gains.
Yeah, Thorazine has a lot of and then with, medical side effects. And so it's also after one of those things where after they've tried everything.
Yeah.
Then they give you Thorazine, and if that doesn't work.
And what they also accurately portrayed was that, like, his... You get withdrawal when you get off antipsychotics, and so him having, like, tremors and headaches and stuff, like, is typical. So that is an interesting thing that they brought up, which I don't think a lot of people know, is that you can't just stop taking psych medicine. A lot of psych medicine does have withdrawal symptoms that can be very dangerous, and you have to be very careful. And that's why you have to wean off of them.
Right, and if he was taking one of those... Chances are he'd be taking something else to counteract the side effects, right? Because they get like the tongue lashing or involuntary spasms, which they call tardive dyskinesia. Is dangerous and sometimes irreversible, even with medication. Like it may never stop. If you once you start that, that may be permanent. So medications like that and Haldol are the old school drugs, but they're still used today. But they're usually not used as a first resort.
Yeah, for sure. Well, they're probably, back then I would assume, I'm making a lot of assumptions, but back then I would assume they probably only had more like the hardcore because they were still learning like what were right dosages, like how much do you actually have to give people. Like being a zombie isn't the only version. Like you either are a psychotic or a zombie. It doesn't have to be that way. You can like, there's more nuance to it than that. I mean, I think we've talked a lot about what treatment we wouldn't do. I guess, and this, like we've kind of said, this exact situation is a little out of our depths in terms of DID.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're going to treat it just plain like psychosis, I mean, Ben Kingsley in the movie makes an argument that you don't need to be on medicine, but I would make the argument from, I'm not a psychiatrist, none of us are psychiatrists, so keep that in mind, but from what I understand from psychiatrists I've worked with and also the clients I've worked with who are psychotic, or have psychotic symptoms, I shouldn't say psychotic, that you have to be on some kind of medication to manage that part of you. I mean, at some point you might be able to get off medicine and just be very hyper aware of when you're having symptoms and like just kind of like train yourself to like, okay, that's a voice or that's a paranoid thought. So here's a coping skill to use when you're having that instead of indulging in it.
Right.
Like reality checking yourself, like I know what this is and this is my mental illness, but that's not where you would start if you're in someone who's like full-blown having hallucinations or delusions or paranoia or all three. Like you wouldn't start there because they don't have a mind that's clear enough to absorb what you'd be teaching them.
Right.
So from what I understand, and I know this is psych medication is controversial to, for a lot of people, is that being on medication is usually the first step and then also going to therapy so that you have a steadier mind to listen to and trust your therapist and absorb what your therapist is going to try to teach you.
Right, because oftentimes with psychotic disorders, it's that the levels of dopamine are off in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And no amount of therapy is going to correct that.
And I think that's the big misunderstanding too, and I don't blame people for misunderstanding it, is realizing that a lot of mental, like a good portion of mental illness, like even like bipolar, mood disorders, sometimes anxiety stuff, like schizophrenia, psychotic disorders, obviously, are chemical issues in your brain. It's on par with having a physical, like physical illness.
Correct. It's a physical deficit of a chemical in your brain.
Yeah. And so it's not like medicine to like dope people up or to make them docile or, you know, it's as if you were denying someone physical health care.
Yeah. Denying a way for their, to help calm down their symptoms, really, to help relieve their symptoms so they can get the help that they need. It's kind of like not, you know, giving somebody who's having an asthma attack an emergency inhaler and not giving them a chance to do anything besides continue to not be able to breathe.
I mean, I guess another argument I can make is encephalitis. I might be saying that incorrectly, but it's like a fever in your brain and that gives you psychosis. It gives you like a bad sense of time, like tangential thinking, all that stuff. And it's clearly a medical issue and you take medication for it and medical treatment and then you get better and your mental health symptoms go away. And so if we can think about it like that, then why can't we also think about schizophrenia like that or psychotic disorders like that? There's something wrong with your, like, quote unquote, wrong with your brain. Your brain's not working correctly for whatever reason.
Right.
And you need medical treatment to feel better.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. And, like, something that you also have to explain to people, like, we're talking a lot about somebody who is psychotic and dissociating, and he's had syndrome of the most chronic symptoms you can possibly ever have in this movie. But sometimes with clients, we'll encounter one of the things you might want to explain to them and explain to people is, like, no amount of prayer or exercise or therapy, sometimes
classical music
or any of the things you hear will correct, particularly once it becomes something like schizophrenia or something chronic, is that your brain has stopped producing chemicals in the same amounts or uptaking it, depending on the situation, that it needs to. And you may need medication to restabilize the chemistry in your brain in order for you to be able to consistently do those behaviors that might return it to more normal levels. Like, I've described it with depression before. Like, right now your serotonin levels are so low that you're not going to get the same joy and reinforcers out of even doing the activities that might bring you joy otherwise, that you need to use the meds to change the way your brain is reuptaking that chemical so that you can enjoy it again, so that you can start getting your brain to produce it on its own again.
And I guess the next argument we should make is you should not only be on medicine.
No.
Because also people, I think, have this idea that once you say medicine, that you're saying that that's the only answer. But good mental health is medicine and therapy if you're going to do medicine. You can do just therapy and you can do medicine and therapy, but I never advocate for just medicine.
No, never. I always tell people it's like having a mental illness is like having a locked door in front of you. Medicine may unlock it, but you still have to walk through it.
Yeah. That's a good analogy. I'm going to steal that.
It is. It's good. I like it.
But I think that's the truth. And even with people who are schizophrenic and things like that, like, it might be slow and steady, the process in therapy, because, you know, you're trying to get them to think linearly and think, you know, be able to absorb what you're teaching them in a way that makes sense, which might be hard, especially in the beginning, you know, but it can get there. Because I've worked with even little kids who were having a lot of psychotic symptoms, were not seeing reality. And I, like, after medication and therapy, they were able to get to a place where they were doing okay in school and doing okay with their peers. And those were kids that were, like, violent and irrational and would snap, like, probably similar to how Leo's character was presenting in the asylum. Like, no reason why they would all of a sudden just snap and start, like, flipping, like, a chair and things like that. And you can get there. And I think that's also another fallacy, is that, like, once you're super ill, you're always going to be super ill. I mean, prognosis can be difficult and it can be a long process. You might always be somewhat have psychotic symptoms to a certain extent, but it's not, like, hopeless either.
No. When I worked in an intensive outpatient program, and there are people who'd been there for years, and there are people in various stages of treatment, and there were people who maybe weren't probably ever going to get a whole lot better, but there were also people who, despite dealing with these symptoms, were able to work, were able to live on their own, were able to own cars and drive and be perfectly fine, despite maybe even interacting with what we call internal stimuli, that it's not hopeless. Even people who deal with these can learn to cope with it and function in society. And there's a lot of bias out there that once you get this diagnosis, like Brittany said, you're sick forever. I mean, you may have the illness forever, but it doesn't mean you're going to be impaired to the point where you can't independently function.
Yeah. And I guess this is where we can also maybe call, like, some bullshit on this movie is, and where the muddiness of Leo's actual diagnosis comes into play, is if he is having DID, then why would he be on an antipsychotic? Because the little research we did about DID before this episode,
it's not indicated.
It's not indicated to be on antipsychotics for DID. DID actually do a lot of cognitive behavioral therapy.
Right, cognitive behavioral, family therapy. You might want to put someone on anti-anxiety meds or give them something to help them sleep.
Take the edge off.
or something to help deal with the trauma symptoms, which is almost always combined. It's the thing with actual DID that makes it particularly dangerous is oftentimes when people are in their alternate personality in a fugue state or having dissociative amnesia, they get themselves into some kind of traumatic situation at that time. Mm-hmm. So then we're dealing with the trauma that created the fracture and then compounding traumas that resulted from the situations of not being in your normal self with your normal awareness.
Well, also it's scary, the idea of like you wake up and you can't remember the last 3 days and anything you did in those last 3 days. I mean, God forbid if you like slept with someone or went on a bender or stole a car or even just ruined, like said something embarrassing to a colleague or like missed work, like that's really scary.
It's really scary. It would be just terrifying not to be able to remember what you did, regardless of what it was.
Right. Imagine waking up and not knowing where you've been for the past 3 days.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, a lot of it, but I think that kind of continues to go under this argument we've made of this movie just is kind of trying to present like a person who's like psychotic, not necessarily like an actual specific diagnosis that would have like a linking intervention.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So with this movie, like, despite it not showing things necessarily accurately, it poses some interesting thoughts. Like, overall, I think the movie is fantastic film. Mm-hmm. I really like it. And some of the film things it does where the way they start showing, like, the outside world as representing his chaos with the storm that comes as he's starting to get the medicine, like, the way they started changing the lighting, his makeup, his presentation, his acting.
I mean, it's a good story.
It's great. It's a great
story. It's a really good story. And I watched it when I was younger, like, when it first came out, before I was, like, practicing. And I'm sure that experience was a lot different than now, because now as a therapist, I'm watching it and I'm like, oh no, oh no, oh no, what? Oh no. Like, it just like, cause I don't know if I'm assuming this is how you guys felt too. It's like, what was like thinking about like, if I was a therapist and I had to do this, like I can't, that would give me, I'd have to take anti-anxiety meds because it would have me freaked out.
Yeah.
But also, you know, I think that was also the time of like, well, I mean, I shouldn't say that was that time, but I do think there are a lot of people in any field where they want to get their name on a paper and have the new breakthrough treatment. And so they would do wild stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, there was the person who did the very first lobotomy and they were like, yeah.
Right?
I'm going to get a Nobel. I think the guy who did the first lobotomy got a Nobel Peace Prize. And there was a debate about whether they should rescind it after the fact. Because
The answer to that is yes, they should.
Bad news bears.
So I don't think I would watch this movie again. I think that it is a good story, but it also is kind of hopeless in a way where he decides at the end, like, oh, he gets better. And then he decides to get a lobotomy anyway. And it was just a hard, as a provider of people of someone who's worked with people who struggle with delusional issues, it's a hard movie to watch. I don't know that I would watch it again. I think it was well done. I think there was good acting, the writing was good, and it's a good story, but I just don't think that I'll ever watch this movie again. I wanted to watch it a second time for the podcast and couldn't get myself to watch it yesterday.
it's a rough movie. I'd forgotten how rough it is, particularly like for me. I was watching it with my wife and my infant child, and like as they were going through like the
yikes,
yeah, it was yikes. Like I, yeah, like when he's like holding his like drowned daughter's like my hand, it was like on my baby girl, like oh my god, like it affected me in ways I didn't even like imagine before having a child. It was like Jesus, like I can't handle this right now. I mean, like holy shit, it's
graphic imagery for
pretty
sure.
Graphic,
yeah, it's I mean, a harsh movie.
It's a movie worth watching twice just because it's got a cool. The twist, and it's always cool to watch a movie a second time and see what you notice. Yeah. Because I remembered the twist when I watched it this time, and I was like thinking, like, oh, it's interesting that like it's like foreshadowing, like having the patient that he's looking for have the same problem he's having, and how like he slowly changes costume into more of like a patient's costume, and how the atmosphere, the environment, like you said, gets more like deteriorated as his mind state, like his delusion breaks down, and all that's like really good storytelling.
Oh yeah,
and I think it is worth watching twice for that. But it was like a bummer, dude. Because it's just like, well, is this gonna get a friggin' lobotomy, and then everybody's dead or fucking donked out? Like,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. And then poor little Mark Ruffalo, everybody's future husband, was just like looking on, like, well, shit. Angel.
I know.
I think he might be in there, but oh well.
Right, but we can't. So, final thoughts on the film.
I mean,
watch it if you want. No, just kidding. I mean, watch I think it's an want. Interesting. Like I said, it's really hard for me to decide how accurate as a mental health presentation it is, because I feel like I have no idea what it was like in the fucking 50s in institutions. Yeah. It could have been just like that. It could have been nothing like that. And I would believe either scenario.
Right.
Yeah. Because prior to the 90s-ish, like, I mean, think about Reagan-era institutions and when Geraldo Rivera did that whole, like, expose, and then that ended all the institutions, which was, you know, debatably good or bad. And, like, there's so much we don't, that was so much just, like, whatever was, like, it was on. So I think, as a therapist, I really don't, I feel like I can't judge how accurately of the portrayal it is. I can also definitely understand why psychiatrists at the time would think the way that Ben Kingsley's character would think, how you kind of said, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I think it's interesting. Does it do a great portrayal of psychosis? Obviously not, because we couldn't even, like,
yeah,
really 100% hammer down what we think he was presenting with.
Right.
Because even, like, our guesses are guesses. Like, DID is, like, a mild guess because it's only one personality, and it's very similar to his root personality. So, I mean, someone could listen to this who does DID treatment, and they're like, the fuck? So, who knows? But, I mean, I think it's a good film. I'm not going to shoot down a movie where I get to look at Leonardo DiCaprio and Mark Ruffalo for 2 hours. And it's, a beautiful film looking.
Yeah.
But it is rough, and it's, I guess, touch and go with how accurately it portrays actual psych treatment.
Yeah, I agree. And I know in one of the books that I read, what even got me started on wanting to do movies and mental illness was a course I took with Professor Hanf Martone at Eastern on movies and psychopathology and film is what she called it. And I bought an updated version of the textbook by Danny Wedding, and even in his assessment of this movie, he writes, like, he gives it five version of five stars, which is clever. And then, so it's like, it's an entertaining, well-done film, but does little to educate the watcher on mental illness. And I think that's true.
Yeah,
it doesn't,
I think so too.
It doesn't, like, show you much about, like, actual mental illness, but it is a very thought-provoking, well-done movie. I enjoy it. It's not one I can watch many times. I own it, but it's a fantastic and well-done film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same.
Ditto.
Well, I just mean, like, the film is good. Like, it's a good movie. Like, I think the actor, the acting is really well.
Just
it's
too close to the subject.
It's a good
matter.
Story, but I think for me, it was just too much. I just don't know. I mean, if you want to watch it, go ahead. It's a really...
It's not like a pleasure movie. Like, I want to feel good, so I'm going to watch Shutter Island today.
No,
it's
not.
Like, I had a bad day at work. Let's watch Shutter Island.
Yeah. So, but, but the story is really good. But I do agree that did this movie have anything to do with moving ideas of mental health forward? No. The answer is no.
Yeah. No.
And it didn't do any... It doesn't do anything to help. Yeah. It doesn't do anything to educate. It doesn't do anything to remove stigma.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's the most violent... dangerous mental health patient that they have. So it's just like, in that way, it doesn't really do anything as a provider, and it just kind of makes me bummed
definitely
out and sad
good,
for the people that I've worked with who have a really hard time and how hard it really is and what it looks like. Because this kind of, Leo doesn't come into an outpatient office at a private practice where we work.
Yeah.
He's institutionalized, and we'd never see him.
Correct. He would be in the most secure facility, state-run facility, for sure. This is not someone who would
be in outpatient
treatment.
And who knows if he'd even be... Who knows if he wouldn't even be in just a prison, straight up?
Yeah.
And then being solitary.
Exactly.
These days, it's more likely he'd be in a prison, since all those facilities we mentioned closed.
Are closed because of...
Reagan era.
Reagan.
Politics.
There used to be 20 or so in the state, and now there's 4, I think.
Mm.
Five
size indeed. So find us at Instagram at Popcorn Psychology. You can find us on Facebook at Popcorn Psychology. We have a Gmail, popcornpsychology@gmail.com. Please find us on iTunes. Please rate us. Please review us. And please follow us.
We look forward to seeing you next time.